Oh, hello.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, can you hear me fine? Yeah.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, perfect. First of all, welcome to the Forgewood Outdoors podcast. Second of all, before we get this started, I have no idea how to say your name.
Try.
Nils? Niles?
First one was closer.
Nils.
Yeah.
Do you have a can? Do you have? Can you say it so I can at least get close to it?
Nils.
Yeah, no chance. Okay, well, I'm gonna call you the Swedish blacksmith, as you are a Swedish blacksmith.
Yes.
Now, of course, first thing, well, introducing you are a Swedish blacksmith. Would you like to sort of, first thing, obviously, what got you into blacksmithing itself? Because it's such an ancient sort of pursuit, and it's not really a common thing nowadays.
No, it isn't. Well, when once you're into it, it seems like it's everywhere. You know, like if you start drawing, perhaps. You see everyone drawing. I don't know if that's just a thing, but to me, all I see is blacksmithing, but that's because I'm in the community a little bit, you know?
So your eyes are more open to the sort of, you see people who are more in, you sort of around people who are into it more.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you wanted to know how I started out, or
Just as much detail as you can. Just I'm here to hear you talk, basically.
All right, I'll try. I started out 3 years ago, and I think that I was very much influenced by my childhood. I've always been into, like, you know, knights and fantasy stories and stuff like that, you know. And when I was very young, Lord of the Rings, the movies came out on cinema and stuff like that. So And that really blew my mind, you know. So we made swords, me and my brother, out of wood, and we played video games, Final Fantasy and stuff like that. And I come from a farm, so in a very rural place in Sweden. So going outside, you know, spending time in the forest, playing Lord of the Rings was a thing back then. Spending time in the wood was something that we did a lot of, playing mostly. So the, you know, the, what do you say, the weapon kind of things, always, I always had an eye for, you know, medieval weapons and stuff like that, thanks to the fantasy. I remember my mother told me that apparently, I saw a blacksmith when I was really young, and I said to her that I wanted to be that when I grew up. I have no recollection of this at all, but you know, time went on. I started doing other stuff. I became a musician, and I played music and worked as a teacher a little bit. And then finally, I had this, you know, crossroad in my life, basically, where I ended up leaving the music business, going into nothing, basically. And then I found blacksmithing. But I can't remember, you know, that thing drew me into blacksmithing because I was so bored one day, and I really wanted to make a sword. And I had this piece of iron or mild steel laying around, and I didn't have a forge or anything, but I just thought that, hey, it's kind of the shape of a sword. So I took it out to the workshop, and I grinded it with the file, and I made a handle out of, like, old beer bottles and tape, basically. And I was like, yeah, it's kind of a sword. And then I thought, then my father told me, hey, you can use the angle grinder if you want to. And I tried to use the angle grinder, and I really liked moving metal. And then slowly, but I got into, like, maybe I should build a forge, and I did, and on that road ever since, basically. And so yeah.
Well, this is probably a great situation, but I now have probably 100 questions about that speech you just gave me.
All right.
First of all, you were in the music business. Like I say, did you play? Did you sing? Were you like a sound tech? What did you do? What did you do?
I was a bass player,
Oh, wow.
electric bass.
Any particular style you were into or you were part of?
During the college, you say, I think, music college, I was introduced to a lot of jazz because that's what a professional musician needs to know, basically. But I've also always been into like rock music and more of the dream theater kind of stuff, like heavier music as well. But I also like beautiful music, basically, is what I go to.
When you say beautiful music, you mean sort of classical, like Mozart, or more?
Any style, as long as it's beautiful.
If the music speaks to you, I suppose that is a beauty in a way, yeah. A beauty in the eye of the beholder in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, some video game music can be extremely beautiful, in my opinion.
That is true.
And it can vary a lot in style. I don't care that much about that. As long as it like tells a story. And even if it doesn't tell a story, I can imagine a story. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't even have words in it, but it still speaks to you. That's powerful, in my opinion.
You can carry on.
And I find a lot of similarities with music and blacksmithing, to be honest. It sounds, like cliche to say that. But
thinking like one artistic style to another, your brain to, like, mix it somehow. Yeah,
and I also think that blacksmithing suits me very well. You know, in these times, I'm gonna probably get shit on for saying this, but you know, masculinity can be kind of, you know, not so popular.
Or downtrodden in the media, yeah.
Yeah, especially like the old school, you know. I've always liked that, not always. I think that's why I went into the music business, because I wanted to be creative, but I didn't want to, you know.
It's not quite ballet, but it is still quite creative.
Yeah. So when I found blacksmithing, I thought that it was a very good, you know, in between. It's very creative, but it's also like labor work, and you get sweaty and tired, and there's something that's nice about that as well, you know. After a day's work, you're like tired in your whole body, and you really enjoy the rest, you know.
Because I guess with you, it's like you always sort of picture blacksmiths as these massive sort of older dudes, sometimes gray beards and like giant leather aprons. Is there a certain uniform you have to wear to be a blacksmith, or can you just do it in like jeans and a t-shirt?
You can go in with jeans and a t-shirt, but and I did for a long time. But I did team up a little bit with a Swedish company called Blå Kläder, who makes like work gear for carpenters and stuff like that.
Oh.
And I thought that maybe those kind of clothes can be good for blacksmithing as well, because I mean, jeans are very good. They're durable. They really are. But you need, like, you know, what's it called? You know, those shoes with the steel inlay. Oh, steel
toe caps, boots.
Yeah, exactly. There's a bit of a language barrier here, since English is my second language. But
your English is way better than my Swedish. Like, I don't even have a grasp of like any form of the language. You were sounding perfectly. If you hadn't said you were bad at English, I would have just thought you were a bit like you were trying to think of what to say.
Oh, okay. I'll just shut up when those times.
You dropped yourself off a bit there, right?
Yeah. But you know, what was I saying? The shoes. Shoes. You drop heavy things. You can drop a hammer and you don't want to wear sneakers, you know.
Have you ever dropped anything on you, like any damage yourself in any way, blacksmithing?
Yeah. A lot of times. The worst time was my first ever, you know, you don't say a show. It's like, you know, when you do blacksmithing for other people.
Like performance, sort of. Be show. You are showing off sort of your skill to people. Yeah.
Yeah. It was an old market, you know, like, and there was this old blacksmithing shop from the 1800s. Wow. And me and another guy were invited to just forge, basically, to show the people of the market. Cool. And super fun experience. And I had never done it before. And we were going to make this old school blacksmith's knife. It's what it's called in English. And we were started, and we thought, hey, maybe it can be a fun thing if I hit and then he hits with a sledgehammer directly after. And we go like this, you know, dun, 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 to get the speed. And accidentally, he hits my hammer on the way down. So my hammer flies right into my eye. And I get it all like spinny and, you know, dizzy. And my wife was there with me, and I started bleeding out of my eye, and so I had to leave the scene to go and get, you know, bandage and stuff. And I was gone for almost 40 minutes, and then I came back and finished it. But that was probably, you know, one of those times I'll never forget. So I even have a scar right next to my eye from that, and you know, a scar from a from a flat object, it's kind of impressive to get a scar from that, you know.
That entire story, so like when you were saying like you wanted to show a more masculine sort of side, you want to become more masculine, that is like one of the most masculine stories I've ever. You took a sledgehammer to the face and it took you less than an hour to come back and carry on. Like if someone told me that story and it wasn't you, I'd probably think, yeah, you're full of it, you're making fun of me.
I didn't think about it that way. Yeah, so that was like one of those, you know, really odd things that happen that happens because that I've never I've seen people get, you know, like they hold the sledgehammer and they hit stuff and they don't really think about where the handle is, so they hit themselves in the penis, you know.
Oh.
I've seen that, but in the face, it's not so common, I think, with a hammer at least.
Think you'd see more like caved in faces if that was common.
Yeah.
So you talk about your wife sort of being there with you. Is she pro you being a blacksmith? Was she against it, or were you together when you started off, or?
So I met her a little bit more than a year ago. So I was a blacksmith when I met her.
Oh, wow.
I know it's fast. We're married. We just got married a couple of weeks ago.
If it feels right, you do it. That's a good,
Yeah.
yeah.
Values are the most important thing. Yeah, I mean, it's still kind of a hobby. I mean, it's this year, 2020, has really been like, you know, catapult year for me. Like I have orders probably for the next into the next into fall, you know. So I have a lot to do, but I do have a second job. So I don't do this like full time. I do it perhaps 40% at the moment, but it's going full time, you know. I can see that in the rear view.
Wow. What's your other job? Like, what's your secondary job?
I'm a
Like,
teacher.
oh, what do you teach? Like, what's your teach? Oh, you did say that before. What's your teacher?
Music is basically what I'm teaching, but
Oh,
I've
wow.
gone into a bit of religion and history as well. I really like those subjects. I think that's very interesting.
Is that sort of the link to your, is that the, did the blacksmith thing sort of start that? Or do you think that your love of history and sort of the past sort of folded into the blacksmithing itself?
No, I think that actually came after the blacksmithing thing. Religion has also been something that grew on me, like reading old literature, texts basically from very long time ago, and trying to find meaning in old stories is, in my opinion, very important. There's a lot of wisdom there that's easy to take for granted, in my opinion.
I can imagine with you, because you probably have one of the oldest professions, you're going with one of the oldest professions on the planet, and that you're probably like learning from the history for you is probably one of the best things to do, because you're sort of thinking about how these people would have used a blacksmith, how blacksmiths would have reacted to these sort of situations, how you as a, because you could sort of put yourself in that situation and sort of say, if I was this person doing this and then I was around this sort of world, I end up, because I think not a lot of people can do that because they have quite modern jobs. It's quite hard to put yourself in a sort of past situation.
Yeah, and I feel that even some places where I worked as a teacher, you can feel that way too. It's so modern. Like, it's not even that old way of teaching kids anymore. You know, like, so much is done on the computer. And I'm not all against that, not at all. But I am against, you know, having classes of 30 when they're kids. there's no interaction, no dialogue. It's just basically someone saying what you should do, and then just learn the thing and do the test, and you're done. It's not learning for life, you know. It's more like just finish the test and get a grade, basically. And I'm very against that. I really like telling stories and having them interact, especially the religious stories are super nice to you know, make them interact and think for themselves. Is there more to the Bible than these stories? Can we find wisdom in this? You know, that's so fun to talk with them about, you know.
That is a fascinating thing about sort of stories that you read, sort of, you can read sort of like the Red Riding Hood fairy tales, like Grimm's Brothers fairy tales, and you read them and you think, well, these stories aren't really meant to be the stories themselves. They're the messages trying to teach kids and trying to teach the future generations messages so they don't have to learn themselves. I think the Bible was full of that. Because you read certain stories and you think, this situation might be a bit like magically and sort of all up and down. And even if you don't believe in sort of the biblical side of it, you still see the message in the pages and you think, that is a good life lesson to have. And it's understandable why they put that in a paper and said, teach this to the future generations.
Yeah. Like, there's so much of that. And I'm sure, like, blacksmithing comes into that for me somehow with the history thing, because now I wasn't that into history before, but now it's like trying to research an old axe, for example, which is what I do most.
Yeah,
it's so much fun. I'm searching for the axe name and I'm trying to find information, see if someone else has written about them. And also, I think I'm privileged in this position but I am privileged that I was born into a country that has a lot of history when it comes to tool making, the Scandinavian culture. I think everyone has heard of Viking Age weapons.
You seem like a very calm and very sort of down to earth bloke. You think your ancestors were probably on a boat killing my ancestors?
I don't know. My ancestors were probably farmers.
Isn't that what most Vikings were? They were farmers most of the year, and then sort of during raiding season, they'd go out and come back with sort of money. And because I understand Sweden hasn't had the best, like, you have quite a really cold winter, don't you? So probably things don't grow as well.
Yeah,
in other countries.
Sure, and a lot of times you had to save for the winter. That's a fun fact there. Also a historic fact. That's why Swedes and Scandinavians like salted food so much, because we had to salt to store it. So we stored meat and stuff in salt. Fun fact. And that's why our, you know, the black candy, Turkish pepper or what it's called.
Yeah, I think so.
That is also salted version. It's also Swedish version. People think that comes from abroad, from different countries. They think we're crazy eating that because it's so bad, but a lot of Swedes like it. So yeah,
you sort of look at like Sweden and all the other sort of Scandinavian countries, and you see we all sort of picture you as sort of larger and sort of quite fit. You never see a fat scan. You never meet a fat Scandinavian person, so you never think of salty foods as your sort of forte.
That's a good point. I've never thought about that. I mean, there are fat people here as well, but
you hope so. Yeah.
But now that you say it, I don't know any fat persons. Not like, you know, obese fat.
Like maybe a bit a beer belly, but nothing like down to his knees sort of situation.
No, there are people. I've seen them, but I don't.
They're more the minority than the majority in most.
Yeah, I'd say that. Yeah. But I'm not a professor in that subject at all.
it's understood. Because you think from like the few photos you have on your Instagram, you seem like to be fair, you're a blacksmith, so you're quite a slim dude with wide shoulders, and your wife seems quite tall as well. Are you both fairly tall, or are you average for your country? Or
how tall are you?
I am 5'10".
In centimeters, please.
like 170 something, something like that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm 186 centimeters long.
So you're probably about a foot taller than I am.
Mm.
So you are Sorry.
What's I need to check that.
It's
186 centimeters to feet. That's 6'1".
You're above average, and you're actually quite far, a bit above average in our country. But I'm guessing, is everyone quite tall where you're from, or is it just...
I think that the average is for males are 180.
Yeah, so fairly, fairly tall.
Yeah.
Well, tall for the rest of the world. For you, it's probably like, 180, look at the dwarf.
Yeah. I feel short when I'm around some of my friends. But I mean, there are tall people all around the world. But yeah, I think that we have a kind of a high medium.
Mm. I know you are quite. I think it's because everyone sort of pictures sweet. Most people only know about Vikings, so you always think like, yeah, huge people who have axes and for some reason make furniture. That's the only thing we know about, like, the eastern country, northern country.
Yeah, and eat raw fish.
It's fish. That's the big thing for you, as well, fish.
Yeah. I mean, you know that if you go back like 100 years or 200 years, people were a lot shorter, so Vikings weren't that big if compared to today's people. But maybe they were compared to the people all around the world then, just like we are now as well.
Well, you look at sort of English history, and it is like, you do know that they were quite a bit shorter. I think English people were seen as, I think we were the average, like, as in like most English people were the same as Europeans, whereas the Scandinavians tended to be, well, at least they were known to be fairly taller, but that may have been just like the fear mongering of the people at the time. Because you see a guy coming over on like a rowboat with an axe, you probably think, yeah, he's probably bigger than me.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so but I'm not super, you know, well read on the Viking age as well. I'm more into the tool making things. That's what I really find interesting.
So you said you make axes. Mm-hmm. That's your sort of forte, but is that your favorite thing to make? Is there anything you really like making, really get into making?
I really like to make, I really like to make axes, but it's a lot of fun making one axe. It's not so much fun making 20 of the same axe, you know.
I suppose if you can make one that's like your own and you can sort of design it how you want, and when you grind it, you can become more close to it. But when you're making 10 of the same, you have a deadline, it probably kind of ruins it for a bit.
Yeah, it does. But I mean, who am I to complain? I'm getting paid to do something I love, so it's awesome. But you know, it's a bit tiring making the same of same axe all the time, basically.
You have like your own axe, like an axe you've made for yourself, or is it just you use whatever?
I have one that I made for myself, but that was a test piece, you know, for something else, basically.
So do you have like a style of axe you like to make? I know like the old Danish axes used to have like the sort of, what they were like, I think, how to explain it, it's like a half moon shape, and then the blade sort of peter off until the back of the hilt. I probably sound like a child talking about this to you, but, and then you have like a wood axe, which is more like a square blade, and then you carry on to other sort of... Do you have like anything you prefer to make, like out of the style, or do you just sort of...
It depends on what I've made the most. If I made, for example, now, I don't know if you know that, but I got featured on a YouTube channel a while back.
I saw a few videos of you, or like, I think it was you, yeah. I think that's how I came to sort of know you, to be fair.
Yeah, no problem. That's how most people got to know me. A guy named Scalagrim reviewed one of my axes that I made. And that was a Viking age, Viking inspired, I should say, bearded axe. And the bearded axe is those axes that have, how should I describe it? It looks, I don't know how to describe
it. It's not easy.
No, it's very hard, but as you said, it's more like the letter L, but it's laying down.
Oh, do you I think I know what you mean. It's like the shorter line's at the top, and then it leads down into like the longer sort of line.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, let's just say yeah.
It's hard to describe it, but the beard axe is like when you think of a Viking axe. The beard axe is basically what you see. For example, if you saw the TV show Vikings.
I'm very fond of the TV show Vikings.
A lot of them had bearded axes.
Wow.
So I made a bearded axe for that guy, and he reviewed it. And after that, I've gotten like 1 million, but a lot of orders for those kinds of axes. So now I really like just to make a simple forest axe. That would be super nice to make one. But I don't have an order for one, so I'm just going to make one for myself. So you have to, like, since it started as a hobby, I think that you need to maintain that love for it in the middle of all that work, you know?
Do you ever have that? Or do you ever look at sort of your workshop and think, do you always think, oh, this is my home? Or do you think, oh, this is my workplace?
Good question.
One depends. The other. Yeah.
It depends what I'm doing. So I do run my YouTube channel as well, and I see that now more like the hobby, and the axe making more as a small business at the moment.
Oh.
And I try to like blend them sometimes because they are part of each other. Like without the YouTube channel, I wouldn't have the orders I have. But the YouTube channel makes that, that's where I can test and do stuff that I don't necessarily sell, you know, so that makes it fun, even though I have a lot of the same thing to do.
Moving on to, but it's like, I don't know much about your countries. Like, what can you tell me much about Sweden besides like the history? You've told me about the history and about your own sort of experience, but do you know anything you want to talk about, like the sort of what it's like living in sort of Sweden? So, like I said, not a lot of people around the world know a lot about Sweden, to be fair.
No, but if you're a Swede, it feels like everyone knows a lot about Sweden. So, So living in Sweden is special. I mean, it's a very, what do you say? I don't know. How is it living in Great Britain, in England?
I'll give you a worst and a best. The worst part is when you meet someone not from England and then they give you the normal stereotypes about us being like sort of limey, us being having bad teeth, us drinking all the time. Usually 2 out of 3 are true for most people, but still it's not fun. And they all seem to think we know the Queen, which is a weird thing. She's one lady who is like really famous and not everyone knows her. And I think the best thing is probably just we're not a very diverse like landscape. We have very like just rolling hills, the heaths, the moors. But I love hiking around England, it's so green, it's normally alive most of the year, and though it does rain a lot, it is just even camping in the rain can be amazing. It's like,
all right,
like for you, it's like worst and best of living in Sweden.
Okay, so it depends where in Sweden, I should say. It's a very long country, literally very long. It's high, you know, it's like it's super long, basically. But I live in the middle, close to Norway, very close to Norway I live. And I live in a valley, a really big valley that has a lot of very, very nice history. And the people living here are very down to earth, friendly, helpful. And we live in this beautiful valley with a great lake going in the middle. And on each side of the valley, there are 2 villages. And in the middle, on top of the lake, is a small town, basically.
If you say on top of the lake, do you mean like...
North of the lake. Of the lake. Sorry, not on top of it.
I was thinking, is it floating? Is it frozen? What's going on? Sorry, I broke your train of thought. Carry on, Nick.
So I really like how it looks. Like summer is green and it's beautiful and everything like that. And it's very untouched. A lot of wood, open fields, valleys, a lot of valleys where I live. And during the winter, it gets a lot very dark, and everything dies. But there's beauty in that too, you know. It reminds you that we are mortal, and that's soothing as well. Being, you know, the fact that we are going to die—it sounds so horrible saying it now, but there's something calming with that too. You know, like make most of it out of your life, be kind to one another, and love each other, and stuff like that. You know, that's important. And also, you know, when the light comes back and the days start to get longer, you really get happy and you can start to walk outside without 200 meters of clothes on you. There's so much joy in that, you know, enjoying spring, like truly enjoying it, because winter has been so horrible. So it reminds you of life once again, and I think that's the best part about Sweden. At least where I live.
That does sound amazing. And you said,
And every oh, sorry.
no, so you said you live near Norway. I was thinking, like, is there like an obvious accent to you from people from Norway?
If I go to Stockholm, for example, and I really, really use my accent, they think I'm from Norway. Most people do that.
Yeah, because like, because I live quite close to a country called Wales. It's like a small island country by England, was attached to England. It's a funny way to describe it. Like I can hear it. It's such a sharp difference to me. But when I meet, say, an American, or I meet someone even from like Europe, they can't really tell the difference between our accents. And like most English people hate that, but like with the deepest part of their souls, because we are very patriotic people.
Yeah, that's something that I don't like about Sweden, if I'm getting honest. And saying this to a Swede could mean life or death, basically. No, but I really, really love this place. And when I say that I love Sweden, I don't necessarily mean the government or the nation, but I do love Sweden, like the country, the land, you know, just knowing that my farm that I grew up on, it's owned by my father. And before him, my grandfather owned it. And before him, his father owned it. And before him, his father owned it. So, like,
You like
a
the
direct
roots.
line down to me of my forefathers have worked this that earth that soil to make it better for us. And that's something that not many people living in cities nowadays can understand.
I completely agree with that. I grew up on a farm. Well, I grew up on a my granddad raised horses, but my family come from quite far back, sort of farming stock, the same as you. And we haven't lived on the same farm as much as so we had some financial troubles on my great granddad's time, but now we're back to living on the sort of off the land. And I can tell when you meet someone from a city who's never had to deal with that, you can tell they have no real respect for how things are made, how things are done, and they're always in a rush. They never think about like the low sort of planting, waiting, growing, reaping, and then selling. They never think of that long sort of haul of how food is made.
Yeah, exactly. And also, like, I once talked to a girl on a phone date, you know, and I told her that I'm never leaving this place, and I'm also going to buy my father's farm after him. And I'm going to live there. And I want my sons or daughters to have it after me if they want to. And she was like, "You're not even going to move where I live or meet halfway?" I'm like, "No, of course not." And then I asked her, "Have you lived in the same home all your life with your parents?" No, she moved around a lot. And that explained it to me. Like, she doesn't have that, you know,
the roots. She doesn't have the roots.
Yeah, not at least not to the place. And I mean, you can have roots in families and stuff, but there's more to it than that. And that's why I think there's such a big like difference between, you know, the fear of patriotism. And what that means, because immediately they think that it means racism, basically. But that's not what it means to me at all.
And a lot of people seem to think that, especially with immigration, they hear, oh, I'm very patriotic about my country and its history. And they go, so you don't think anyone else should be able to move to your country? And I'm like, when did I say that?
Yeah. But then again, you have immediate, you have these, like, I don't know if you saw that, but the Scandinavian airline released advertisement.
Yes, that's you're bang on there. That's it. Yeah.
They like really tried to fuck with the. Oh, sorry, I shouldn't swear on your podcast.
Oh no, I think I know what you're talking about. Is that it was like no Sweden is Swedish or something like that. Like Sweden isn't for Sweden.
Scandinavian isn't anything. We stole everything. That's what they said.
Yeah.
And that is so false. It's like, it's when I saw that, I honestly got very upset, and I told my wife, I'm never flying with them ever, never ever, no way. I'd rather go to Denmark and fly from Denmark, or I'd rather go to Germany and fly there. I'm never flying with them. And if that means I'm never flying to another country again, fine. But I'm never doing that. I wouldn't know, no way I would sink that low to go with those people who, because we have this polarization in Sweden and it's so bad. I think that one should be able to talk to each other, even if you're a socialist or a communist or whatever. The discussion is what's important, you know?
Yeah, it's like if you communicate with someone as if you're communicating with someone you love. Like, don't treat them better than you, just treat them as like a human being, even if they have a different political stance than you.
I'm so tired of this, you know, group against group thing. It's so bad for everyone.
It's a sad thing to say, but it's human nature. We're very tribal as a species. You think, if you say, I'm in this group, and anyone else in a different group who doesn't believe the same I do is somehow hurting me. I understand that from a sort of a animalistic point of view, but from an educated person, you think, surely you can understand where they're coming from and you can sort of move to maybe don't ruin what they love and don't ruin what you love, sort of come together to love the same thing.
Yeah. And it's always, oh, it's their fault. Like, that's all what the politicians are talking about. Like, it's bad now, but that's because when those guys were in charge, everything went to shit. But yeah, right. That's true. So
none of them ever mentioned, like, if one politician went up and went, all right, so overall, we're not great people at doing this. Like, whoever gets into politics is already not a great person to begin with. At least we start off good and then we tend to get corrupted on the way. But
yeah.
Like, hopefully, I love this country. If someone just said, oh, I love this country, I want to make this country better. Like, I don't want it to be, I want it to be inclusive, but I want it to be like its own place. Like, I want it to be known for being itself. I'd respect that. Like, I'd respect that. I don't know, people would probably crucify the poor guy, but I'd respect that.
Yeah, I think there's a place for both, you know, like conservatives and progressive people. I think both, one doesn't take out the other. I think they can work together, to be honest.
If you meet a lot of people and they can always tell you which side they're on, but you always talk to them and you always see that they have ideas that are mixed in a way. Like, you think that they might dislike a certain part about, I don't know, immigration, but they might like the fact that, like, legal immigration, they might like that. They might like people coming over and they might respect the fact that they want to come over. And if they just phrased it a different way, you couldn't tell which side they were on.
Exactly. And I mean, just for an example, like in Sweden, all you can hear about your country right now is that, oh, you left the EU, you're so horrible, and it's going to turn to shit and all that. And Boris Johnson is evil, he's the next Trump and blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, I listened to his speech to the nation, or what it was. And I was moved. I really was. I thought that it was a very beautiful speech. And there was something... I mean, it could have been, you know, written or whatever. I'm sure it was, but there was something about it that and I'm not even one of your countrymen, and I really got moved. And same with our prime minister, held a speech as well. And yeah, I have mixed feelings about him, but his speech also moved me, because there was something about him speaking to Sweden in that speech, and Boris speaking to the people of England, basically. Yeah, I'm. You know, you can find positive things in both sides. That's what I'm trying to say, basically.
I think that is the best. And with Boris Johnson, like, I love the Brexit debate, not because I'm very pro one side or the other. It's because you can see that politicians wanted it to go one way. They really wanted us to say, yeah, we want to stay with the EU, because it would have been easier for them. But like, we had the election and we had the referendum, and yet each time the entire country went, no, we want to leave. We want to be independent. We want to be our own, like, sovereign nation away from this controlling entity. And then the politicians seemed to go, well, oh dear, like, I can't. Oh no. Because this, they only seem to have, because like, the amount of times you hear someone calling the other party racist or like homophobic, or they hate a certain type of people, or you hate like all immigrants. I'm like, no, we hate people who come over and like just come over to steal stuff. We don't hate people who come over legally the proper way and they sort everything out. Like white, black, Asian, as long as they come over legally, they have a home here.
Yeah, and also that in Sweden we have this like discussion of. And I think it's silly. Like, when are you Swedish? Like, yeah, define that, please. But I mean, just thinking about it, like, if I go to Japan, and this is an argument that's common in this debate, if I go to Japan and move to Japan, do I become a Japanese person?
Well, that's the thing. You don't really think about like the history of the country. You think, obviously, immigration is a great thing for a lot of places because it brings new ideas, new customs, new food. But you really think, I mean, I guess if you're born in a certain country, but are you raised with that country's ideals, like their customs? Are you raised in your parents' customs? And then are your kids raised in the same way and so on? How far down the line do your kids become just like any other? Like you couldn't pick them out of a lineup in any other area of the country.
And then the second question, why is that important?
That is a fair point. You think, why is where someone comes from a big deal? It really shouldn't be.
Yeah, but it is.
It's like religion, caste, or creed. As long as you're a good person, you should be fine.
Yeah. Well, how did we get to this?
This is an outdoor podcast and you're a blacksmith. How did we get on politics? I started this podcast because I wanted to talk to people in all lines of sort of the outdoors and sort of the more down-to-earth trades. I really wanted, if it's a free-form conversation, wherever it goes, as long as it's talking to someone that I want to talk to, I'm happy. And you are, like, you're probably, like, out of the two people, you're the second person on this podcast. So you are definitely, like, you and Dr. Bill are definitely the best people I've talked to in months. Like, not against my friends, but you're definitely more interesting than people I know.
Oh, thank you.
So moving.
I mean, I was thinking about that when you asked me to join. That like, what can I bring to the outdoors thing? I mean, sure, I like being outdoors, but I'm not that I'm famous, but you know, I'm not known for being that bushcraft guy. You know, not at all. But then again, I do make tools for bushcrafting. So maybe that could be something too.
That's where my mind sort of went when I first sort of saw you and heard you talking about things. And I thought, like, I know a lot about sort of the outdoors and how to survive outdoors, and I'm going to talk to a lot of people about that, but I really want to know about the tools we use, because that's like the main lifeline for human beings. I mean, I was talking about that with Dr. Bill the other day. Like, he was talking about how tools are the driving force for all humans, because we're just weak animals compared to most, but with tools we just become this greater and nobler force.
Yeah, that's very, very epic, to be honest.
Yeah, because you are like the perfect idea, because you make quite old-fashioned, I mean, an axe is very sort of universal, timeless, but it is quite an old-fashioned tool, you think?
Yeah, you, it's not a gun, exactly. Yeah, and I mean, that's the really awesome thing. Like, in blacksmithing, we have this saying, need a tool, make a tool. So the other day, for example, I needed a new pair of blacksmithing tongs to grip my axe while forging, because forging an axe can be kind of tricky. There's a lot of moving parts, and you don't want to hit accidentally hit something that might disrupt the other side and stuff like that. You need to be very precise in your blows. So I made a new pair of tongs to work around that problem. And that is basically one of the mindsets of blacksmithing. You need something, make something, because a blacksmith can make a lot of different tools.
Well, you think a lot of people have lost that now, because a lot of people think, oh, I need something, I'll buy something, or I'll pay someone to do it for me. Whereas a lot of people sort of, you're the perfect example, you make your own sort of tools, which is an almost forgotten craft in like the grander scheme of media. You never hear about someone making their own stuff. You always hear about people buying something from someone else.
Yeah, I even made my own power hammer, if you know what that is.
Is that the thing you hit? I know this is probably quite a dumbed-down version. Is that the... So I'm guessing that's the hammer you hit. You always see like the blacksmith with the hammer hitting the metal. I'm guessing that's the hammer you were using.
Well, it's not a handheld hammer. It's not... A power hammer is a machine that hits the metal for you. And they come in different shapes and forms. Of course, the oldest ones are called mechanical power hammers. And they are made out of a motor somehow spinning and moving something that makes a hammer go up and down, basically. But there are also air hammers that use pneumatic forces to move a hammer up and down. And that the idea is that you can move a lot bigger material that way. And back in the days before electrical motorized things, they actually used water. They used water wheels to move a big hammer as well. And you can see that in really, really old footages from blacksmith shops, where they have this water wheel and this huge, long piece of wood with a metal hammer part at the end of it, and the water wheel moves, and this goes up and down, and that way you can move really big stock and forging it smaller or into different shapes.
Is that sort of how I'm guessing that's how people became more streamlined with the process? Like, it's probably easier to make an axe with that machine than having to do it sort of hand with a handheld axe, the handheld hammer.
I mean, you know, thinking about it. And this is also a fun thing for, I'm going to give you a small lesson here in axe making. So there are two ways of making an axe. So one way is you make it out of a big block of steel. Now, a big block of steel was not that easy to get a hold of 1,000 years ago. So when they made iron and steel back then, they usually got smaller pieces. And what they did then was they forge welded them together to make bigger pieces. And that may have been easier to do by hand, especially with the tools they had, because they didn't have anything else than a hammer and an anvil, you know? So using smaller stock, putting them together to make an axe was probably the way to go. Folding material a lot of times as well. But when the industrialization came, and they can start, or maybe perhaps earlier as well, but they can start making bigger pieces of iron, basically. Then there came this, not a demand, but you know, there was this, what do you say in English?
Demand, I think, or
it is demand, maybe
need.
For need for something bigger, basically, that can move bigger pieces of steel. And usually the market supplies that in the end, because if there is a gap somewhere, someone who wants to make earn money is probably going to invent something, you know.
Supply demand, yeah.
Supply and demand, yes, that's what I was looking for. So that's probably how that came to be. So a power hammer is basically a big machine that moves metal faster. That's the idea. And I made one myself this fall, out of old scrap pieces. So need a tool, make a tool, really applies to the blacksmithing community, literally.
That must be amazing for you. I mean, you look at a pile of scrap metal, most people think, oh no, that's going to be really difficult to get rid of. You look at that and go, oh cool, completely new set of like utensils for me from me and my wife.
Yeah, I'm always like this when we're out walking here.
Yeah,
I can see something in the ditch. I can see something that looks like wrought iron. Let me go check. And I jump down into the side of the road, and I go and I inspect it to see what kind of metal it is. And if it's something like rare old iron stuff, I usually take it with me home, because I'm a nerd, I guess.
I think the fact that you make axes and that you forge metal, but I think nerd works in the sort of sense of the word, but no one would ever call you that, especially when you're holding an axe or a hammer.
No, I know, but to me it feels the same way as being like interested in a video game or a book series or something.
I'm moving on. You said before that you were quite interested in fantasy and sort of the books, like in Lord of the Rings. I was going to ask you about that, but we ended up talking about all this other stuff. Is there any author you recommend? I'm quite interested in sort of fantasy style genre and sort of the old historian. That's why I got into sort of hiking and everything, because it's just, I love going outside and sort of picturing the history and sort of the magical aspect of why people thought nature was so sort of awe-inspiring.
The best author, in my opinion, in the world is C.S. Lewis.
Really? I haven't read any of his work. Can you recommend a certain book for me to start on? Or?
Mostly he wrote Christian books. I mean, even if you're not a Christian, I think there's a lot of wisdom to gain from them, because he speaks so much about life and the world. But the Narnia books are incredibly good as well. More suited to children, perhaps, but there's a lot of, depth to them.
Right.
If you want to see the depth, you can see it. It's almost like Christianity, basically. If you really look for the depth and wisdom in that, you find it. But if you only want to see them as stupid, non-realistic things, that's what you see. You know what I'm saying?
Perfectly. What's the thing? I'm the only Christian in my family, because I had a kind of a awakening when I was younger.
Yeah, you're a Christian?
I'm assuming you are. Or
yeah, I am.
You talk about religion, I'm thinking, like, he's probably not Jewish. That's probably not like a Jewish blacksmith. No. No shout out, no dissing. There probably are Jewish blacksmiths. I mean, like, you're talking about Christianity mostly. I'm thinking that must be your main. Is that very common in sort of Scandinavian region? No.
No, it's not. It was. Scandinavia, Sweden, has been a Christian country for over 1,000 years.
Mm.
I think the first like Christian missionaries came here around 800, the year 800. But it didn't really stick, you know. It took a while for that to stick. We had this really great folklore and mythology here that, Thor and Odin and all that.
I love reading about all that. I love reading the really old stories as well, because you can really see sort of how the civilization is sort of built around them.
Yeah. And that, there's this, I mean, Scandinavian people have been here for, they think, 15,000 years.
Wow.
Yeah, that's longer than you think, because people assume that we haven't been here for so long. But we have. There are historical finds for that. I don't have the sources here, of course.
Well, you find the evolutionary sort of precedent of it, and you think, I think it's because I remember listening to a few things about it, and they think humans are incredibly ancient, like, when they really look back at it. Because 15,000 years, you think Christianity is only 2,000 years, and all sort of, that's AD, and we're at 2020 AD already. And then you go back to BC, and like, not a lot of people know a lot about like the BC past 1,000 years, and you think 15,000 years of just, that is an insane number when you really sit down and think about counting to 15,000.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah.
And when I read that, I was a bit, you know, well, that's not what you learn in school.
Mm.
What you learn in school that was that we emigrated here and there was another people living here called the Sami people.
Mm.
But that's not true. They lived in the north of Sweden first, but we lived in the south and middle part first. So, and what I read last time I researched this was that apparently they came around the same time, basically after the great. I'm not sure anymore. I'm not sure of the dates exactly, but sometime after the great ice age, basically, people started to settle here. I mean, that really is living in the same tradition and having a folklore that's very important to the culture and stuff like that. That said, that, you know, that sets its what do you say,
precedent, sort of thing. Sort of
practice, yeah, it makes its mark not in the community, but it. Like if you have a strong folklore and the culture, it will affect the
people,
the way people live. So when the Christian missionaries came, trying to like make everyone Christian, that wasn't like the most important thing at the time. So, but it took around 300 to 400 years after that until like it really was a Christian country. So,
is a lot of people think the Christian religion got so into the European nations because not a lot of European sort of ancient religion have written anything down. It's very rare for them to have written anything down. Whereas the Christians, they writ everything down. They writ every story, every saint. They writ down story after story about them. And that, because like the written word sticks past longer than a lot of spoken word, and it also sticks with a main story, whereas I think a lot of spoken word tales can dilute over the centuries.
Yeah. I mean, there was kind of, you know, like people talk about like Viking people or Scandinavians back in the day being stupid and didn't have like a written language, but that's not true at all. We did have runes, and more than you think, the common folk could actually write. And to this day, we still find new stones with runes on them in the woods, lost somewhere. So it's more common than you think. And a lot, of course, has been destroyed through the years, and implemented in architecture in ways. Mm. How did I come to this? So yeah, if you're a Christian, definitely read C.S. Lewis.
Definitely.
I mean, there's so much. I think you should start with Mere Christianity. It's a very good book.
All right, let me write that. Actually, yeah, I'll write it.
Even if you're not a Christian, I love that book. I've read it, I think, 4 times.
I'll definitely have a look for it. I'll have to look online now because obviously with the quarantine, I can't go out and look for it. All the Amazon's backed up in months. How's the quarantine affecting sort of you and your country? Your country? Lockdown?
No, we're not in lockdown.
Because I remember there was a big issue with that. A lot of the sort of your countries weren't really doing it, and I think.
Yeah. Norway and Denmark, I think, are doing it. It's so hard to say. I don't know. I don't think anyone can say yet what's the best method.
That's true, to be fair.
I was very against it at first, not having a lockdown. But now I don't know. I can't say. I don't have really have an opinion about it anymore.
Because England has quite a harsh lockdown now. Like, people are getting taken away from local parks and not being allowed to go out as much. Like, shops are being closed off to certain areas. And it becomes this idea of how far is does like health go until you're getting rid of people's like right as humans to be sort of in a free country to be free? And it's just a real like it's a real slippery slope. I'm thinking if you because we give the government this power, and are they going to want to give it back? Are they going to just go, yeah, you're,
Yeah.
yeah.
That's something I'm thinking about as well. But you also have this. I was talking to my brother, and he was basically the one who, not changed my mind, but gave me like a different way of thinking about it. Like, let's say you're an old person now. And you're sitting inside your home. Let's say you're 80. How many years have you left to live? You have no idea. 10, perhaps, maybe 20, maybe 2, maybe 0 years left to live. You have no idea. Do you want to spend like 1 year? We don't know how long this is going to be inside your home, not being allowed to go out, talk and meet person, different people, your family, grandchildren, children, relatives. Friends, is that worth it? And that's also something that you need to think about because I started seeing like old people. We have this, like the government has gone out and say, we advise people over 70 to stay in their homes. That's what they say. And I agree to that. I agree completely. Yeah, sure. It's very good that they stay inside, but I also understand the people who doesn't because I don't think that they do it out of, fuck the government. I don't think that's what they're going through in their minds. I think they're thinking, I want to be free and I want to see my friends and I want to take a walk with my husband, perhaps. And there's no way I can, like, who am I to say that that's wrong? As long as it's not affecting anyone else,
I agree definitely because I have quite a lot of older relatives, and a lot of them now because they're in the quarantine. I can tell because talking to someone, even now talking to someone over Skype, we're talking to someone like on the phone, isn't the same as talking to someone in person. Because there's
No.
that human connection people need. And you've ever had that? You've ever like been away from people for a while and then come back and like hugged your wife or your girlfriend, and then you just feel that sort of the love and the connection. It just feels, oh,
Yeah.
it's undescribable. It's indescribable.
It's something that I don't think we truly can describe with anything else but love. And love is a whole experience,
Well, it's the love of. I don't think there's any other kind of love between two people, because you can love a pet or you can love like an object, but loving another person and having them love you back is it's amazing. It's truly the, one of the best things you can experience.
Yeah, it is. And I think that that might actually be one of the biggest problems during this crisis. I'm not trying to like say that the people dying is not a problem and the economy that's going to collapse after this perhaps is not a problem. It is, but there's also that other factor of just the humanity. And being human in that's very important as well.
It's like I think it was a I can't remember who said it, but it was the phones that make us more connected drive us further apart, drive us farther apart. And it's such a dark thing to think about that the technology is so far ahead, and yet people are becoming more anxiety and depressed, and just they can't handle life in the same way anymore.
Yeah.
I
Fun fact, by the way, you said you're the only Christian in your family. I am too.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yeah.
It's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it's strange.
It's
How did we end up here?
for me is my parents sent me to a small school that's near our house, and it's not classed as a Christian school anymore, but the teachers are very old-fashioned at how they teach, and they were very, I mean, the building was a converted church, so I kind of grew up believing in God. And then when I told my family, they were like, "You believe in God? Like, what? When did this happen?" So I just assumed, I always, because I have, and I always have assumed that he, I have sort of believed that he's real. So it's like someone telling you the sky isn't blue. You're like, it is blue. Look, it's blue. So how did you, did, was it sort of, did it, was it because of your sort of stint into religion, or was it just a, when you were younger, you sort of found God in a way?
As I said, I was in the music business, or industry, I should say. And depending on what kind of like way you're in it, there's a lot of well, let's say bad behavior, basically.
In, I guess, in a biblical sense.
Yeah, like a bit of drugs, perhaps partying, you know, like what do you say, promiscuousness? Is
Promiscuous.
that,
Promiscuous. I think just loose morals, very loose.
yeah, basically. And there, as I said, I mentioned earlier, I came to this crossroad basically where that didn't work anymore for me, and I came to kind of a dark place, to be honest. And I told myself that I need to change some things in my life. And I heard this guy talk about a metaphor for Harry Potter.
All right.
And I'm going to tell you now. So he was talking about Harry Potter in a Christian sense, because he said that one of the reasons that Harry Potter is so famous is that it's filled with archetypes.
Right.
Like everywhere you see, there's an archetype. And he said, I don't know if J.K. Rowling knew this or if it just happened, you know, because these stories are so, these are some of the oldest stories to man, you know, like Cain and Abel. That's a very, very old story.
Flood and
Long
water.
before,
Yeah, it's very.
yeah, long before we could write them down, we told them by the campfires to each other for thousands of years. Like, we have no idea how old those stories really are. They're a lot older than the Old Testament, and the Old Testament is a very old book. So he was talking about, you know, like when Jesus is in the temple, he says, I can demolish this temple and rebuild it in 3 days. And what does he speak about? He doesn't speak about the temple in itself. He speaks about the human body, himself, basically, that he shall die and he shall rise again on the third day. That's what he refers to. And so then we know that the body can be a temple of sorts, or a metaphor for a temple. And if you go to Harry Potter, what is the temple in Harry Potter? It's the building of Hogwarts, right? The school. And deep down in Hogwarts, down in the darkest place, there is a snake, the root of all evil, basically.
The Adam and Eve story. Yeah.
Yes, and we have the metaphor for the archetype there to the Adam and Eve story. And what do you have to do with the snake? And what that means is that in every human being there is darkness, the potential to darkness. Like, don't think that the Nazi guards were something different than humans, because they are humans and you are a human, and you should be very aware of that you have the potential to darkness and evil inside of you.
Well, there was a very famous doctor called Dr. Jordan Peterson. He's a
That's exactly who I'm
yeah.
referring to.
Did you hear his talk on the Nazi girl, thinking about if you were in that position, and your entire civilization was sort of telling you that these people weren't human, they were basically cattle, they were just these disgusting things. Would you really, when you've grown up in it, would you really have thought, would you have been the one guard to stand up and go, no, even if it meant pain of death? I mean, it's a real dark place to go in yourself, but when you come out of it, you still think of yourself as, you think, you're happy about where you live, you're happy about the time you're in, you're happy about the men who fought to fight off that, those people who were just being corrupted by this, what can I describe as pure evil in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And going back to, just going back, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but going back to the metaphor, like for the temple, so what does Harry have to do? He has to go down and face the pure evil of the basilisk, and he has to kill it. And when he does, he dies himself because he gets bitten. And but what happens? The phoenix comes down and cures him. And phoenix is basically an archetype for dying and rising again. So you have those, like, there's like a 1 million archetypes in just that scene there. So what I got from that was, okay, I know I have this darkness in me because otherwise I wouldn't be depressed, you know?
Yeah.
And I know that I have the potential for evil. So I need to face that somehow. And that's what I did. And then I realized, okay, so these stories that I just listened to that inspired me to face my darkness inside of me and to become a better person and to find peace within instead of being scared all the time. Those were old stories from the Bible.
Mm.
I need to read more about this. And so I started doing that. And I started going to church to listen to the priest talk about them to see if I can learn more. Eventually, I met an old friend who is a pastor. And he invited me to come to one of their church meetings. And on that way it was. And basically, after a while, I found God.
I think everyone's path to God, no matter how short or how long, has its own blockages and has its own sort of divots. But I think in every capacity, it is a beautiful experience to have, especially when you believe, when you finally believe in something and you go from not believing to believing. It's just, you feel safe in a way. You feel like there's something there that makes sense in the world.
Yeah. And I mean, if I hadn't done that journey, I wouldn't have met my wife.
Mm. Did you meet her?
Yeah, I met her on a dating site, but it was a dating site for Christians. And I wasn't a full-blown Christian then when we started talking to each other. But I was interested in it, and I knew that I was probably going that way. You know, I felt like I want a Christian girl. So that's basically how that went.
So you met, and she's like, "Hello," you're like, "Hello, I'm a blacksmith." And she went, "You're a what?" And you went, "I am a blacksmith. I make axes." And then
that's perfect, she said, because I'm a nurse, so I can take care of you if you get hurt.
A blacksmith and a healer. That is like fantasy 101. Nice.
Yep.
All you need is a fighter and an archer, and you've got yourself a party.
Ask and you shall receive, precisely. So yeah, that's basically. I wasn't planning on going so in depth here, but I think it was important to the story of me, at least.
That's what we're here for, to be fair. It's just love talking to people, especially about like their history and especially about religion. But that was a surprise, to be fair. It's lovely mm-hmm. to talk to you about it.
And thank you. You too.
And of course, I've got to cut this a little bit shorter because I haven't eaten much today. I'm hungry. Anyway, and of course, I know that my podcast is about the outdoors and you're more of a sort of a black, more of a crafting tool type. But I'd like to ask you something. Has nature ever affected your life in a way? Like, has like sort of the wild or like, because you said you love your sort of your country as its natural beauty. Do you think...
Mm-hmm.
Could you say anything that's really like anything that you really love about nature itself?
I think I mentioned it before, and that's probably the thing that I love about it. It reminds us that we are mortal. And I think there is something truly important about that because we are human beings. We are not forever. We are mortal and we are going to die, but we also have the chance to live here and now and make the most out of that. And I think that nature, like, every year it tells a tale, and it may be the same story each year, but it's one of the most important stories to being human. And if you don't get affected by that, I think you should spend a day or two in the forest.
It's like basically each flower is beautiful, even though they may look alike. Their journey is their own, and they are truly a fascination of God.
Exactly, and it also gives you a moment to be thankful for all the beauty in this world that's so filled by bad things and evil. There's so much beautiful things that it may be able to kill you, even the smallest beautiful flower, but it's also... But if you choose to see the beauty in it instead, that's what it is. Beautiful.
It's nature is a lot like a woman in that way. If you treat her right, she'll treat you right. But if you're bad to her, if you don't take her seriously,
she's gonna try to kill you.
Yeah, you're gonna come out with some scars. Anyway,
yeah.
It's been lovely to talk to you. I think you're the first blacksmith I've ever met, which is nice to know. And it is honestly been lovely to talk to you. I hope everything goes well, you and your wife. I hope like everything happens well. I hope you live long, healthy lives. Please take care, and thank you for being on my podcast.